Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Speaking on a telephone today, probably for the next 2 days until all of the systems are working again and all the viruses have been expunged from my system. Today, we're going to talk on some really unique ways of slowing down the aging process, helping people with cystic fibrosis, among other conditions, and helping people prevent breast cancer. All of this is from peer-reviewed, good quality scientific journals. It's just not being distributed to the American people, and it should. Then I'm going to take on some issues. You're going to have an opportunity to share your points of view if you agree or disagree in part or whole with Professor Heather McDonald. She is saying that much of the university educational system is simply delusional and that the students are a part of that, or at least this new generation of students. And normally, you would not hear her on any of the progressive or liberal programs because she's been labeled as anti-feminist, though she considers herself very much a feminist, but a feminist in the ideal of those who are women who empower themselves to empower other people by freeing the mind from dogmas. Again, I believe that we should not censor people, rather we should give them a forum, and then on our open call line, you can challenge or agree, because you never know what someone might say that might trigger that one of those ooh-ah moments. Then, time permitting, I'm going to do a debate with professor, in fact, he's a distinguished professor, Walter Williams. He says that we're moving step by step towards totalitarianism. It's about a 10-minute discussion. I will be interspersing his comments before a live audience with my own rebuttals and responses. And it's just a different way of taking someone who is highly revered and very respected in the field that he is in. He is not just a senior professor, but he is a distinguished professor, which means that he has received the highest title and positioning in economics at George Mason University, which is a very respected institution. The fact that someone, and here's the point, the fact that someone is got a very impressive pedigree, just like so many of the best and brightest in media or politics or think tanks, doesn't mean they're right. And it means that even if we've never been more than a graduate of high school, we have every opportunity to do our own homework, and if something isn't reasonable, challenge it. But first listen to what they're saying so you know what it is you're challenging. Today, we don't even have open and honest dialogue. People just automatically, by race, they will define the argument by race, or culture, or ethnicity, religion, income status, success or failure in a career, alliances. This is immediately where the arguments begin and end. We don't allow any new information out, and we expect everything that we hold true and sacred to be real and honest. Rarely is that the case. I'm going to be giving specific examples of this in my discussion when I'm responding to Professor Walter Williams. Also, I said earlier, I was actually very disappointed to hear someone equating children being put into these detention centers as concentration camps and the ISIS guards and people putting them there as Nazis. It is not a fair nor even equal comparison. Should we all be outraged? Yes, that is legitimate. Should we define our outrage in a constructive manner that demands immediate immediate release of all those detained? Yes. But what should our policy be? Just saying open borders and free everyone from incarceration is not going to resolve an issue. It's merely going to compound problems. We have to have a responsible, humane, but pragmatic program. Probably 40% of the people who are entirely incarcerated in the United States should not be there at all, should not be in prison. Well, that takes over 1 million people out of the prison systems. They shouldn't be there. They shouldn't be separated from their family. And also, what does it mean when we're not outraged when, and I'll give you an example of this today, when a woman, an attorney who was an advocate for women in the prison system, gave an example of a woman who was on a minor drug offense, sentenced to 2 years in prison, and as her daughter, she turns, as the judge is about to address her, turns to her daughter to say goodbye, she's reprimanded for not paying attention to the judge. Her daughter is crying and taken out of her care to be put into foster care. And then the judge doesn't care about the screaming daughter, gives her 2 years in prison. That happens every day, every hour, every few minutes in the United States. Should we not also be outraged by that separation? Should we not be outraged by how many, at one point, non-crimes or misdemeanors or non-violent offenses have now been criminalized solely because the Clintons and other acolytes who support them, including the privatizing corporations of the prison system, saw that we can make a lot of money, billions of dollars a year, if we get more people into prisons? And actually, they have it in their contracts. What percentage of the beds in those prisons must be kept full? What are you going to do if you don't have people breaking enough laws? You create more laws. You take people that wouldn't have got prison, and you put them in prison. Why aren't we outraged by any of this? We should not be so specific and selective outrage, because that's a mark against us. We should be outraged by everything that negatively impacts a child. And then we should do something about it to stop it and reverse it. But that takes more than just showing up with a sign. It takes more than screaming at someone. It takes a commitment to pragmatic and practical reform and change and stopping the lobbyists from controlling the lawmakers. So we're going to talk about that, but also I'm going to have you listen to a Holocaust survivor. It's short. It's only 4 minutes. And he has a message for those of you who are equating the children putting in these detention centers for 20 days versus what he was put in. He spent 5 years in concentration camps as a child. The fact he survived when over 1 million children didn't. And listen to what he says. Then ask yourself, is it appropriate to make the equation that they're both the same? Because in Poland, in Germany, in other areas that the Germans controlled, they weren't just concentration camps, they were extermination camps. The children were put at hard labor until they died of exhaustion. And also, what about America's long history of taking children away from their parents with no protest and putting them in special schools? I put photographs of these schools from the 1800s right up through the 1900s on my site, so you could see thousands upon tens of thousands of children. They were not allowed to speak their own language. They had to, in effect, decondition them from any cultural attachment to their native upbringing and their heritage. We did it in the United States. The Canadians did it. The Australians did it with the Aborigines. Who cared? Who cried? Who protested? And African American children ripped from their parents. So we have a long history of this. And why has there been no movement to hold up the Clintons who were responsible for creating the laws to begin with, and the detention, and the millions that they detained and then outsourced, and Obama? The fact that someone has a charming personality does not mean that they are not a sociopath, a narcissistic megalomaniac, very sick people. So we have to hold that mirror to ourselves, and we're going to start today. Let's always begin with the latest on health and healing. This is for anyone that you know with cystic fibrosis. The University of Colorado did a study published in the American Journal of Respiratory and Critical Care Medicine entitled Effects of an Antioxidant-Rich Multivitamin in Cystic Fibrosis Randomized Controlled Multicenter Trial by an MD, PhD, Dr. Scott Sagel. And what they found was this. I'll just make it into very simple lay language. By giving a group of individuals placebos and then giving a group actual antioxidants like beta-carotene, coenzyme Q10, gamma tocopherol, which is a form of vitamin E, lutein, they were able, at 4 weeks, they were able to decrease inflammation measurably. And when you can decrease measurable inflammation in a person with cystic fibrosis, that's a very big benefit. And people with cystic fibrosis typically experience chronic bacterial infections, which lead to inflammation and the release of vast amounts of reactive oxygen species in the airways. And that really hurts their breathing. And normally, the body would marshal an antioxidant defense to neutralize the oxidant stress, or what's called oxidative stress. But cystic fibrosis is characterized by deficiencies in almost all the important antioxidants. And this contributes to oxidant-antioxidant imbalance and pro-inflammation, which leads to lung damage and progressive loss of lung function. So in this study, they showed by using antioxidants, just taking them orally, it made an enormous difference. That's good information from a good source. The University of Colorado published in a major peer-reviewed journal. Also, from Tel Aviv University, a highly respected university, they did a study on green tea and wine, red wine, and what they found was that these are able to block toxic metabolites. And that's important. So now, especially certain inborn congenital metabolite diseases, by taking resveratrol, you don't have to drink the red wine, you can take the resveratrol, you get more of it, and green tea, and again, you don't have to drink the green tea, you can take 200 milligrams of green tea. It can help block all these negative biochemical processes that lead to toxic metabolites. And this was published in Communications Chemistry. And this is the journal in Nature. It's one of the Nature most important scientific journal in the world, one of its subgroup. And by the way, you've heard me say many times that the EPA, E-P-I, Galago, G-A-L-L-O, catechin, C-A-T-E-C-H-I-N, Gallate, G-A-L-L-A-T, you can also abbreviate it, E-G-C-G. That's what's found in green tea. That's what's bioactive. And that's what really benefits. So in red wine, you have the resveratrol, generally 100 to 200 milligrams of resveratrol, and anywhere from 200 to 500 milligrams of green tea. Now, from Florida AMN University, there's a study that show that you can protect your neurons, what is known as neuroprotective proteins, and decreasing pro-inflammatory cytokines, cyto, C-Y-T-O, kines, K-I-N-E-S. And that's what happens when you eat a hamburger, when you have a glass of alcohol, when you smoke a cigarette or marijuana, when you have a cola. you increase the cytokines. The cytokines are a major pro-inflammatory agent. They, in turn, increase what is known as reactive oxygen species, or ROS, and that's your free radicals. Now, just a brief understanding. You have, no two people have the same amount of cells, but let's just say between 60 and 100 trillion cells, depending upon body size, age. Of those, let's just average it. Let's just go to the low side. Let's just say 60 trillion. And you have 10 times more bacteria than cells. Now, the latest studies that I could find from Quality Journal shows that we receive about 10,000 cell alterations per 24 hours per cell. Now, do the math. 60 trillion times 10,000 negative impacts every 24 hours. Now, if you're the average person, probably 80 to 90% of everything you're going to eat or drink in a day is going to have a negative consequence. It'll contribute to that. And one of the reasons that when I can get people in an isolated environment, either a health support group or a retreat, I can help make sure that you're not going to have colas, you're not going to have coffee, you're not going to have hot dogs, hamburgers, french fries, pizzas, you know, salami, bologna. You're not going to have any of that. But here's the other part of it. You're going to have what actually protects those 60 trillion cells and reverses, wherever possible, the damage to the DNA, in effect, rejuvenating, making the cell young and healthy again. And there are multiple different ways of doing it, just like with starting the day drinking some lemon water with apple cider vinegar, having a glass of green tea iced tea with mint in it, having some raw organic honey instead of sugar, having a smoothie with berries and essential fatty acids from coconut oil and flaxseed oil, and a scoop of vegan-based protein powder. That's actually rejuvenating and protecting. So by being a healthy vegan, you're able to reduce those 10,000 gene alterations down to about 2. Now, you're still aging, but at a really substantially less level, about 80%. In fact, recently, there was a gentleman. He was on the radio. I interviewed him. It wasn't him, but a nurse that knows him, who's friends with him, said that he had just gotten a biological test done, which they have, by the way, where you can actually tell what is your biological age, not your chronological age, your biological, because we keep putting all of our interest in the chronological age. Well, you're 40, you're 70, you're 80, you're 20. That's irrelevant. What is your biological age? Because that's what's going to determine how long you're going to live or how quickly you're going to die. He was 32. I believe he was 82 or 83 chronologically. And he showed up at a retreat in April. And he was remarkably healthy. I mean, just remarkable. Eyes just white and clear, and tongue not filled with mucus, and his musculature strong because he worked on it. It didn't come naturally. Remember, protecting your DNA won't come naturally. You've got to work on it. So if you work on turning off the pro-inflammatory cytokines, which means altering your diet and what you drink and putting healthy items in their place, you can literally slow down aging by 80% and do a lot of reversal. And this study from Florida A&M University showed that. And guess what nutrient did more to slow this down than any other nutrient? And this is not the first study. Black cumin seed oil. That's right, black cumin. Hard to take, by the way. You've got to always take it by putting it into a protein shake and then taking, depending upon what you're taking it for, but about twice a day. And it is one of the best anti-inflammatories, if not the best anti-inflammatory there is in nature. And also from Washington State University, by turning away from the opiate treatments that are out there, you can actually get better pain results, meaning less pain, especially for those with chronic pain. So they actually don't work the way we were told. That's another lie that we were told about them. And a lot of people die from that. And finally, air pollution contributes significantly to diabetes globally. Washington University School of Medicine published an article that says, quote, new research links outdoor air pollution, even at levels deemed safe, to an increased risk of diabetes globally. And the findings raise the possibility that reducing pollution may lead to a drop in diabetes cases in heavily polluted countries. So we do have a lot of pollution, especially in California, from China and from their own. Too many people living, 40 million people living out in California. And yes, they've had 1.5 million people leave the state, mainly educated people and upper middle class income people, but they've had the same amount of people coming back into the state who are lower income individuals and moving not into Los Angeles, which is too expensive, but up into the middle of the state. That's the latest on health and healing, and that was published in the Lancet Planetary Health. I'm Gary Knoll. We're going to come back and share a lot more. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you, and just mentioning that the Progressive Commentary Hour will have Danny Sheehan, because now that the deep state has emerged from the swamp, and we had Danny on live about a week ago, we had such a tremendous response, so people wanted more. So we're going to take you even deeper into that swamp and expose the people who are at the heart of the deep state and how they're controlling our body politic, how they're the ones behind the scene that control both the Democrat and Republican Party. And that's why we have a whole new movement in America started by a young millennial from New York. I think he is a gay hairdresser, but the hairdresser may not be correct. I haven't looked into his bio. It's just what I had heard. But he got fed up with the lies being told from the liberal and democratic community, which he has been his whole adult life. He voted for Hillary Clinton. And when he started to look deeper, he saw truths that shocked him. And we're going to try to have him on in the near future. So he started a movement, I'm sure what it was. If someone in the audience knows what that movement is, walking it back or walking out, let me know what it is. Anyhow, it's growing. Now, here's what he may not be aware of. There are 100 million Americans who got the story right over the last 20 years and have become independents. That's why they didn't vote. That's what kept Hillary from winning. Because hashtag walk away. Hashtag walk away. We support that. I support that. So good for you for having a positive approach. Don't allow people to use you any longer, either the Republican or the Democrats, because that's all they're going to do. And all they've done is lie to us. I'm going to give you examples of that in a few moments. But in any case, I'm going to give you some specific examples when I do my response. I'm going to do a rebuttal to the Professor Walter Williams in just a moment. Let's just see here. Let's hear from Professor Walter Williams, and he is a very distinguished professor, and he calls himself a true liberal. And I'm going to respond and challenge him.
For the last half century, free enterprise and what it implies has been under unrelenting attack in our country.
Stop. Okay. I challenge you for the following reason. For the last half century, the number one reason that virtually everything in America has become unequal is because we have done nothing but promote in both the Democrats and the liberal community and the official corporate liberal and Democrat community, not true liberals, and the Republican and conservative have been promoting massive expansion, where today, if you look at this, the average person's wage that they take home and compare that to 50 years ago, you actually took home more capital that you were able to keep than today. You work one job, and where you generally had, not in every case, but the vast majority of cases, our mothers would be at home. We had a different home unit. We all had dinner together. Everywhere I was and everyone I knew had dinner together. Our fathers were able to pay for a home, generally around $8,000 to $10,000, with a low interest, 2% interest GI Bill. We had no credit cards. We had no debt. We had no car debt. We had no student debt. There was three jobs for everyone who graduated from college. And our generation, the baby boomers, were the first to go into the college en masse, not my parents' generation. That was a rarity. And for women, it was very rare. We had cohesive societies. You could walk anywhere in America. You could walk anywhere in New York, in Harlem, in Bed-Stuy. You could walk anywhere in Camden, New Jersey, anywhere in Compton. You could walk in any city in the United States and not fear that somehow you'd become victimized. We had crime, but it was very low. We had under 200,000 people in our entire penal situation in the United States, and we had a higher literacy rate. We had low poverty, and we were still promoting industrialization. But then we had unions, and unions, 51% of Americans belonged to unions, and the long history of John L. Lewis and Sammy Gompers and George Meany and all the others who advocated for collective bargaining and better work days and overcoming child labor problems. That was never done by laissez-faire trickle-down the leaders of the Milton Friedman School at the University of Chicago. That came from the people doing that. So we have not had an attack. We've had an attack upon equality. We've had an attack upon unions. We've had an attack upon people not allowing them to participate in the profits of the very corporations they make the profits for. We have created robots and artificial intelligence, and we have, with cheap labor, by outsourcing jobs, over 58,000 factories have been closed from 2000 to 2014. Over 5 million Americans lost their jobs. There was no effort by anyone in industry or anyone in the government to retrain those individuals, whether it was coal miners in Tennessee, West Virginia, my home state, Kentucky, and parts of Pennsylvania. There was no effort to see that their future and their economic status was maintained. It has been a one-way battle. Corporatizing everything. Every agency. Government has been corporatized. The media has been corporatized. Our educational system has been corporatized. Our body politic is corporatized. So, sir, you are dead wrong. Continue.
Americans from all walks of life, whether they realize or not, have demonstrated a deep and abiding contempt for private property rights and economic freedom. Free enterprise in our country is threatened today, not because of its failure, but somewhat ironically, because of its success.
Stop.
That is,
which free enterprise are you referring to? If you're referring to the major corporations, those employing 500 employees or more, it's just the opposite. They have boomed. And even when they have failed, they have been subsidized by the American taxpayer. Timothy Geithner, who was at Goldman Sachs and then went to be our Treasury Secretary and was leading the bailout, preceded by Henry Paulson, to get all the corporations, no matter how bad their decisions were, they didn't lose their jobs. No matter how bad the toxic assets were they accumulated, they were whitewashed. They were taken in by the Federal Reserve and cleaned. Now, how many small businesses, sir, that create more jobs than the government and the Fortune 500 combined? It is the small entrepreneur, frequently having 1, 2, 5, or even a big small employee might have 30 employees. How many were bailed out? They support the free enterprise system. They support ethical capitalism. You, sir, are one of the major spokespersons for vulture capitalism. Exploit a system based upon the power of monopoly, and then when you make a mistake, which major corporations have done nothing but make mistakes, we bail you out. We privatize your profits and subsidize and socialize your losses. You have never done that to a single American or a single small business. You are wrong on that, sir. Continue.
Is capitalism, or free enterprise, has been so successful in eliminating the traditional problems of mankind, such as disease, pestilence, hunger, and gross poverty, that all other human problems appear to us to be at once inexcusable and unbearable.
Stop.
The desire by many Americans...
Stop. Okay, so capitalism has been so successful we don't have disease. You're fortunate you are tenured, because I would love to do a face-to-face debate with you, and I'll show you the reality. The number one expense in the world, the number one, is disease. Not only has our capitalist system not reversed and eliminated all disease, it has increased it. We have an epidemic of diabetes in children. We've never seen this before. We have more fat people in the United States than any other country in the world, including India and China, per population. We are the sickest nation in the world, with $3.4 trillion being spent in a for-profit industry. If a person were to have an accident cutting some wood and chopped off 4 fingers, was able to put him in some ice and rush to the hospital, that person may only be able to afford to put 1 finger back on in our current system. The doctors could reattach all, but they won't, because the person isn't covered. We don't have universal health care. You oppose universal health care. Why? Why not take the profit out of that which is essential to life, health? Instead, you glorify the idea that in a free market system, you should be able to make a profit wherever you can. Well, that's vulture capitalism, not ethical capitalism. I'm not opposed to making money. I'm not opposed to the historical and ethical capitalism. I am radically opposed to vulture capitalism, and especially commodifying items that you know the average person can't afford. The average person cannot afford food. Let me share with you the latest evidence, and maybe you might want to take some time away from talking before groups that support you to read Nation of Change, Paul Buchheit's, quote, 2018 update, more evidence that half of Americans are in or near poverty. Quote, the U.S. poverty rate in 2016 was between 12.7 and 14%, but the poverty threshold is based upon outmoded formula from the 1960s. And the true nature of poverty is considerable. Poverty is not just a dollar figure. There is poverty in the diminishing quality of life for Americans who are unable to pay for medical treatment during years of declining health and instead turn to life-threatening opiate painkillers readily available to the nation with less than 5% of the world's population and 30% of the world's opiate consumption. Poverty is the lack of community support in a winner-take-all society, the stress of overwhelming debt, the steady decline of jobs that pay enough to support a family, and the inability to afford a move to a desired neighborhood, the deadening impact of inequality on physical and mental well-being. The United Nations describes America as a nation near the bottom of the developed world in safety net support and economic mobility, with the highest infant mortality rate in the developed world. Now, sir, I don't know about you. I care about every infant's life. Do you care about dead children? If you do, then why don't you take a careful look at the UN report to see why most of the children in America are dying? Do you care about 16 million children going to bed in America each day where their parents are working one or two jobs or not able to find any job, and therefore the child does not have enough food? That is also what your idea of capitalism and free market laissez-faire has done. And we're not talking about a few people, and we're not talking about welfare queens. We're not talking about those standard stereotypes that you used to pummel any reason out of your argument. The poorest 50% are barely sustained by their incomes. According to Career Builder 3, 3 out of 4 American workers are living paycheck to paycheck, unable to meet any major expense in health care or home or auto repairs. In fact, Charles Schwab says 3 out of 5 Americans live paycheck to paycheck, and that's 75% of us. The United Way ALICE project has calculated 43% of households can't afford a monthly budget that includes housing, food, child care, health care, transportation, and cell phone. So they have to sacrifice. So you're going to sacrifice your health, your house, your rent, your food, your car. What are you going to sacrifice? Because in the world I live in, which is not a college environment, if you can't afford food, you starve. Unless you find a charity or someplace, and I live in two places, one on a ranch, but also New York City, and right around the block where I live, there is a food kitchen in a church, and there's a long line, and I've noticed over the years how long that line's getting. Good for them for not just being a church, but one that lives by the principles that all religions should have of care first for the poor and those who have the least. Where's your caring? Like a lot of the people who think they're hip because they call themselves the free marketers. Well, what do? You say you don't need a system. The system shouldn't pay. The government shouldn't pay. We, the taxpayers, shouldn't pay to subsidize people who are going through a rough time. Leave it up to the free market. Well, we have. And how many people had their homes not foreclosed on? 7 million did. That's 28 million Americans minimally, because their neighbors jumped in and helped them out. How many people went ahead with their medical procedures because someone jumped in and helped them? How many people were able to go to college because someone else jumped in and helped them? How many people living on the streets of San Francisco? There's 56 straight blocks where you can't walk without stepping on feces or needles, and the people are angry and destitute. Many mentally ill people are in that environment, and there's no help for them. So where exactly are these humane, benevolent Americans who are supposed to take care of the safety net that you suggest is there? And right now there are 12 million Americans who are at retirement, and all they have is Social Security to live on, and that's going to average around $1,200 or less per month, and there's no other income. So, sir, you live on $1,200 a month. And let's see how much you have to change in your lifestyle. Continue.
To eliminate the so-called inexcusable and unbearable problems has led us away from the basic ideals and principles upon which our nation was built. In the name of other ideals, such as equality of income, sex and race balance, affordable housing, medical care, orderly markets, consumer protection, energy conservation, we go on and on, we have abandoned many personal freedoms.
Stop. No, we have not abandoned freedom except the freedom of choice. Corporate America, working with its partners, has refused to allow us freedom of choice of how we want to be treated, let's say if we have cancer and we have a child, it's mandated by the state and they can take your child away and do. We have no freedom of choice on mandatory vaccines, even though there is no vaccine, sir. You and the rest of the liberal community, if that's what you're calling yourself, or the conservative community, please show me one sign, and I'm a scientist, and I know what I'm talking about. Show me one study in all of scientific literature, a double-blind, placebo-controlled gold standard, that one group received vaccines and one group received a saline solution, and you followed them 5 years. That doesn't exist. There is no safety criteria. There is no efficacy criteria that would pass anyone but an idiot's mindset that we should be having any vaccines at all. It's the greatest health fraud perpetrated in American history. And because you control the industries and because they're profitable industries, you're happy about that. You're happy that the vaccine makers were able to pay off and pay the lobbyists to pay off Congress in different ways of favoritism in order to pass a bill that mandated that you cannot sue a vaccine manufacturer for the injuries caused by a vaccine. By that notion, why not pay off the car makers? So if you get killed in a car and it was the car's fault, manufacturer engineer's fault, you can't sue them. Why not do it for every drug? So if you take aspirin and you die, you don't have to worry about a lawsuit if you're a manufacturer. In fact, why don't you do it for everything? Hold no one in corporate America responsible for anything. You're already almost there based on the notion of the stupid charters we have. And then you control the system with the freedoms of industry to pollute without consequences. But maybe I'm wrong, sir. Show me the last individual, like the Koch brothers, those diminutive little. Show me someone with that little bit of a mind and intellect and spirit left in them that has been held accountable, that's gone to jail for polluting the environment and causing global warming. Oh, do you believe in global warming? Show me the people who had major corporations that manufactured Vioxx and caused the death of minimally 60,000 people, and they knew in advance it was going to cause heart attack and stroke. That means malice aforethought. They paid it. $5 billion fine, and they walk free, and their stock went up. That must have made you happy, or other free marketeers. Only in America, sir, could you kill 60,000 people with intent, and you get a reward and a raise. In the real world, you'd be held accountable. And you believe in privatization of education. Well, what exactly does that mean? It means that from those institutions, those schools that need qualified teachers and good curriculum and need to be given attention, you take the resources and put it into charter schools. I see this as backwards. Continue.
As a result of widespread control by government in an effort to achieve these so-called higher objectives, we're increasingly being subordinated to the point where considerations of personal liberty are either secondary or tertiary matters.
Stop. The last time I looked, no one was prevented, no American citizen was prevented from living anywhere in the 50 states. They could live anywhere they want. They could take any kind of traditional educational course in liberal arts or specialty. They could take trade schools, courses. They could learn a craft. They could engage in any kind of relationship with lawful adults if they wanted to. They could write a book if they chose. They could sing. They could master their crafts and skills. No law prevents that. No one, no governmental agency says you cannot engage in these freedoms. And I dare say that the United States, as many problems we have, it still has more freedoms than any other country in the world and more opportunities. But instead of playing on a fair field, the bottom line is this, and then I'll end this, that if you and all the other economists that support the Milton Friedman School of Economics, if you were to put the small business person with no bank financing more often than not, using family and personal savings and funds, going into very concentrated markets with very high rents, no love from the landlord to them to give them a break, and working long hours, and they survive. Now take a look at how many corporations have failed because of equity partnerships that have no interest in having a company succeed because they make their money on the deal. They load it up with debt, and every penny of profit that comes in, they rake it off. Circuit City is an example. Well-run company until they were purchased by an equity partner. Linens and Things, and thousands of others. That you may support. I don't. I believe that every single person engaged in this type of buyouts and then loading the company with debt, knowing full well that in a down economy or questionable economy, they may not be able to post enough profit for these people to be happy, so their sections are ripped out and sold separately. They're cannibalized. Employees are let go no matter how long they've worked there. So how smart is the American business community? We're a bunch of goddamn idiots. Small business people, they're smarter than the corporate CEOs. You show me anyone at Goldman Sachs and GE and all the other networks, and show me a company that without help succeeded, and it's a handful. Now show me how many failed. And these are the so-called best and brightest and were helped and subsidized and got loans and were able to live through debt and leveraging. Well, how smart were they then in the end? And why weren't these so-called brilliant economists at the Federal Reserve that saw this happening? And why weren't all the bankers that gave this money when they knew that it was these people were over-debted and undercapitalized? Why didn't they fire everyone who made mistakes? And America's unique. In your system, sir, if you fail up, not out. For the average person, if they make a mistake, they fail down. Small businesses fail down. Yeah, we have inequality, but it's not because of government. It's because of corporatization of everything. We're profits ahead of every other consideration. You have another program coming up, and next week we will take that on, and again, I will offer a counterpoint. Now, that a person who was sharing their insights, but without challenge, was Professor, unique professor, by the way, Walter Williams, and telling us how bad it is for business, and I'm saying it's business is bad, at least corporate business. Now Barbara's on the line. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, Gary.
Barbara, we haven't spoken, so I want to hear your story, so we have a few minutes. Please tell us your story.
Okay. Good to hear from you, Gary. I just want you to know that I am a work in progress. I'm moving upward and onward. Prior to the retreat where I came in Texas, I shared many wonderful experiences that I came. I was a broken woman almost because I was tired. I lacked energy. I was suffering with high blood pressure. Just didn't want to do as much as I had done in the past. While I was on the retreat, I ate well, organic food, I exercised, I had yoga classes, I did all those things that were made available in that beautiful, beautiful retreat, the place where we were. Very peaceful, meditation, great food. And while I was there, one of the things I want to share with you is that there was a lecture hall, and at the lecture hall, where it was located, there were many stairs that descended to that area. I had a hard time going down the stairs, much less coming up. I would hold onto the rail to pull myself up. After having been there for 3 days, and after having done the things that I needed to do, to walk, to eat properly, to meditate, to be quiet, have quiet time with myself, I was running up the stairs, Gary. I didn't need any help. I mean, I amazed myself. It was just a great experience for me to be able to navigate the environment as I was able to do. Now, there were many things that happened on that retreat that helped me. I met people of the same mindset. Many of them were having problems with cancer, dementia, which is one of the things that I had been diagnosed with, some dementia. And there I just seemed to improve. My language skills improved. My physicality improved. I had more energy. And the great accomplishment that I had, Gary, is that I was able to speed walk for 3 miles. Now, I have a dog at home, and I walked this dog, Gary, and I walked perhaps one block and then back home. When I finished that retreat, I walked with my dog around, I would say, about a quarter of a mile, and my dog looked back at me and was wondering, what is the matter with this woman? He headed towards the car, would not walk anymore. I walked 7 more blocks, Gary, and now I am up to 12 or 13 blocks with my dog. And she walks rather slowly, but I'm just pulling her along and being quick with that. Now, in terms of the energy that I have, I know that I feel better. I feel more accomplished. My cognition has improved. I'm sleeping better, probably because I'm walking more and I'm eating properly. All of these things I learned that helped me at the retreat. My spirit, I have to speak to that. My daughter was on the retreat with me. And we had just the mother-daughter dynamics. And they're not always good. And we have a pretty good relationship. While on that retreat, I felt so good about being able to speak honestly and openly and be my authentic self. And we talked about things that I would never have approached with her. So I think that our relationship has deepened. It's better. And we talk about almost anything now. I am just so happy. That's the other thing I want to talk about. When I was walking, I felt as though I was a 30-year-old person. And I want you to know, I just celebrated my 80th birthday. I felt happy. It was something that I felt I would not be able to experience because as 80-year-olds, we see many of our friends leaving this planet. And I was on a downward spiral, but I know there is hope for me. I know that I can be a better person. I look forward to the day. I had stopped doing the things I normally do, such as bowling, golfing. I belong to a group called Spellbinders, and that's a group that we went into the school system and we read stories to children. They called me about maybe 2 months ago and said, Barbara, we miss you. We haven't seen you in a year, and I want you to come back. So please come back. But at that point, I said, no, I don't think I want to come back because I have lost confidence in my ability to remember. And when you're a storyteller, you have to remember the stories, not as though you can read. You have to be able to remember. I feel that the way that I am moving forward, I can join that group again. I did enjoy it. I enjoyed telling stories to children. My confidence has been lifted. I know that I can do that. I go to a senior citizen program, not every day, but most days. I take water aerobics. I'm doing the yoga. And I feel that I can encourage my fellow seniors to join me in this because it does help the mind, body, and the spirit. I have more stamina. I just am happier.
How's your blood pressure?
I feel more satisfied. So that's my story, Gary. But
Barbara, what happened to your elevated blood pressure?
Okay. It has been up and down, but mostly down. I was ranging anywhere from 150 over 80. And now it is more stable. I have reached numbers of 108 over 60. But I know that diet has a lot to do with it, and I'm pretty much on target with my diet. So it's pretty good, Gary.
Good.
I will say it's greatly improved and improving every day.
Great. Last thought before we have to end the show. Were you there the day, Friday, when everyone went out for that long walk?
Oh, yes, I was. And I knew that I could not do it, but I was encouraged by you to come down to the road and take a walk. And I did walk. And I was tired, I will say, but I speed walked, and you came over and encouraged me to continue. Lou Ann was there that encouraged me to continue. Now, I wouldn't walk around the corner, but on that day, which was the fifth day of having been in the retreat, I walked 3 miles. It was incredible. I could not believe myself. But I will tell you also about my daughter. She walked a marathon. She would probably not have walked 3 blocks. But at the end of it all, we both accomplished something very positive.
Your daughter walked 26 miles.
26 miles. That's a marathon.
Yeah, that is.
I did walk those.
27 miles. But she and seven others actually walked 27 miles.
Seven, that's right. That's right. But I was a comp, because as I said, I would not have walked around the block. But I was able to come back. The next day after the retreat, I came home and I walked. I usually walk my dog maybe for about 5 minutes. I walked a good amount of time and I walked my dog around the dam, which is in Kensico, one time. I walked 7 additional rotations, which took me, I think, about 20, 25, or maybe 30 minutes.
Barbara, we're out of time. Thank you for calling in and just sharing your experiences. It's just to remind people, when they feel down and out, they feel depressed, they feel anxious, they feel there's nothing to live forward or nothing's going to get better, you're an example that shows there's another way. Your daughter was out of shape. She did 27 miles, but you saw the other people, including the gentleman with the end-stage COPD and leukemia. He did 30 miles, and I had to stop him. So that was a wonderful experience. Thank you, Barbara, for calling in. I appreciate it.
Look forward to I'm moving upward, not downward. I was on a downward spiral, to tell you the truth, but I know now there's another way. I feel so happy. I could not believe that.
Well, from the foundation of happiness, health is going to be inevitable. We're out of time, everyone. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.